for people who didn't know where to go.
Right.
You know, I knew I could go back to Breslau, but what was I going to go in Breslau? I knew that the Russians were there.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that already, you know, and I didn't want to go back.
You say you didn't want to go back because the Russians were there. Did you know instinctively there was something bad about going back to where the Russians were?
Well, I knew. From what I heard, whoever was liberated from the Russians, that they weren't exactly what you were looking for. If you got away from the Germans, you didn't want to have anything
fall into the hands of the Russians.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And they liked young girls and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have heard that Breslau was almost 97% too.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, I knew my mother and father wasn't going to be there, so who am I going to be looking for?
So you tell me then how you make contact.
So I finally did talk to the bus driver, and he told me to come back, I forget what day. So I came back the day before, and I reported to this organization again, and I knew already some of the people there. You asked me who was working there. Mm-hmm.
You don't remember, I'm sure.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't ring a bell, who they were.
Mm-hmm.
No idea.
Mm-hmm.
And but I know that there were people who spoke Polish, and there were people Hungarian and Czechs and all kinds of Jews from all over. They came, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I spoke German there, so that's all I remember. Probably were people from the highest, mm-hmm. and they took German people and German speaking and Russian speaking and mm-hmm. Jewish speaking people mm-hmm. and put them there so you could communicate. I imagine that's
yes,
what
probably
it would be.
Is how it was.
And so I reported the day before, and they said to me, he says, well, there's no use coming today because he isn't going to come back till tomorrow. So I said, well, I'm not going back to the Argentine, I'm going to stay here. And I camped outside that door for 24 hours.
In the building?
No, they wouldn't outside. I guess I never told them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I probably, if I would have said something, somebody would have taken me home
mm-hmm.
and would have let me stay with them, but I didn't. I was afraid of everything.
Certainly.
You know. And I sat on that curb 24 hours, and the bus came. And I couldn't even get up because I could see my father getting off that bus. And everybody got out of the bus except my father. And the man, the driver, told me that by the time he had reached, my father had left. So whoever was in charge in Baden-Belsen at the time, and not in Baden-Belsen, it's a raising shot. In the office, they had told him that as far as they knew, they weren't too sure that my father went to Berlin. Well, Berlin was totally out for me because Berlin, the Russians were. And I mean, that was like going to three times around the world from where I was because you couldn't travel. And I was just still a bundle of, I never did tell you what I weighed when I was liberated. They weighed me. When they took me into the infirmary or before or whatever, I was going to be 20 the 17th of May, and I was liberated the 15th of April, mm-hmm. and I weighed, this is German pounds, this is heavier than here, 57 mm. pounds. Now my son weighed that when he was about 6 or 7 years old. I was what you would call a bundle of nothing or of worse than that. So I that was just terrible. I mean, I was not only that I was a frightened little girl and lost and didn't know where to go and didn't know what to do. And I went back to Baden-Belsen and I was there for quite a while because I did not know where to go and I did not know what to do. And while I was there, I met three fellows, and two of them I recognized walking in Bergen-Belsen on the street. And this happened now in all camps. Everybody came from one camp to the other looking for family.
Eventually, sure.
And I met the brother of this girl who died while we were in the air raid.
Yes.
And he recognized me right away, and he couldn't believe that I would stop him on the road. Well, anyhow, I told him that he was looking for others' family. I says, well, I don't know about the others, but I know I was together with her, and she's not alive anymore. And there was another man with him who I had kind of heard and met one much older than what we were. He was between me and my parents' age, so he was then in his 40s maybe. Mm-hmm. And in another man who was a fellow from Poland. And those three guys were liberated together.
Mm-hmm.
And I had become friendly with the girl when we were being put into rehabilitation or whatever you want to call it. A girl named Ruska, she was from Poland, and we became very close, and we were kind of, you know, mother to one another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She was also a couple of years older, and we were trying to stick real close together, and we said, well, wherever we're going to go, we didn't have to leave,
mm-hmm.
but we wanted to get away from Baden-Baden, but we did not know where to go. And I met these three guys, and they were saying that they are planning on going somewhere into Bavaria, trying to find a place to settle down.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was interested, I said, well, I know my father is somewhere, I don't know where, supposedly in Berlin. And if I didn't get in touch with him by then, maybe I would go there. And mm-hmm. I asked my friend, and she said, yeah, she don't care. She can't go back to Poland. She hadn't found any trace of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So they were there for a couple of days, and they got themselves something to eat together or whatever, got themselves a little strength together. And the only way you traveled was by trucks, if trucks would take you,
mm-hmm.
you know, from here to there. And
Army the trucks, of course.
Army yeah. trucks, or, yeah, most of them Army trucks, or whatever. German civilians or whatever, but they left, and they said if they find a place, they would come back for us. And while they were gone, there was a German, a real German guy, in you could see it by the boots. He had German boots on, and he had like a German uniform, but he didn't have any insignia, so it was all off. Was coming through the camp, and I bumped into him. And asked me, I don't know whether I knew of this one or that one or whatever, and through the conversation I found out that he was going to Berlin trying to find his bride. They had just gotten married, not officially because they weren't allowed to get married anymore, but he was in the service and he married a Jewish girl. And he was trying to go back to Berlin, trying to find her. He went to so many camps, but he hadn't found anybody who knew about her, so he thought maybe she went back to Berlin.
Was he a German citizen?
A German citizen who was in the army, but he loved this girl and they knew each other.
But I mean, how could he just circulate freely about?
Well, this was after the war.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do any crime. He was a soldier,
mm-hmm.
but he wasn't in prison. Mm-hmm. Everybody moved around mm-hmm. then. By then, you mm-hmm. know, it was just
a
kind of a normal yeah. world again, but
yes.
you couldn't get anything and there wasn't anything there, but sure.
Yeah, right.
So, and I said to him, I said, if you're going to Berlin, I'm going to give you a piece of paper with my father's name on it. Oh, yeah, because I have to be going looking into places where Jews would be.
Mm-hmm.
So I could leave it there for the next guy to come along and maybe put it on the wall or something. Well, I don't want to get into that too much anymore. To make the long story short, he found my father, and my father didn't believe him that he knew me, and he remembered only after my father telling him my father all about me and repeating that. Then he says, oh my God, he says, come to think of it, she did write your name on a piece of paper. My father seen the handwriting.
Oh my.
He believed.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did he make contact with you?
And I only heard that from my father later. I did not have any contact with my father as of yet. And these three guys came back, and came back for us. Remember I said to
yes.
you, I'm going to try to wind it up. They came back for us. They came back and they said that they have found a little town in Bavaria where there are quite a few Jewish boys. This is American Army territory. Mm-hmm. Quite a few Jewish boys. And they would love if we bring a few people in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we got our things together, whatever we had, what we had acquired. I know that I had a blanket,
mm-hmm.
and I had like a, put everything into a blanket, like the farmers used to drive and put it on my...
I meant to ask you, did you get new clothing?
Yeah, I think we got some in Hanover, and I think they gave us... Well, I know I wasn't in my rags anymore, that I know. But... We finally, I think they stayed a couple of days and we had to try to get some food. And they had already done some black market business,
mm-hmm.
selling this and selling this so they would have some money. Nobody gave us anything. Well, the Germans did later on, you know, mm-hmm. once I settled, they did give us food rationing and they gave us some kind of a money and whatever, and they got it. But anyhow, so we got our things together and we went on with them and we hitchhiked from one truck to the other, and it took us quite a few days till we got to where we were going. And I started to get quite sick on the way, and my legs were very swollen, and I just wasn't in. I thought I was already, you know, as good as new again, but I wasn't. And when we arrived where we were going to go, there was a curfew in Germany. You were not allowed to be out later than so-and-so. And by the time we arrived, we were already past the curfew. And I guess if we would have told whoever caught us that we were who we were, probably didn't mean anything, because they did not necessarily have to believe us. And mm-hmm. we were just so afraid, we didn't want to do anything, that we were getting into trouble with the mm-hmm. Americans. So anyhow, we arrived at our new destination and we get off the truck. And the truck was in a big hurry because they had to be in a certain time, and it was much later already than that. And they went off with all my belongings.
Oh my.
And here I was again with nothing. Oh, I see all the little nothings I had to begin with. But they had housing, and we were in a very, very nice house. And there were the three fellas and the two of us. And it was a private house, you know, it was taken away from somebody, from a Nazi, and mm-hmm. Whoever looked after them gave him the house. So the next morning, they said that the Jewish boys are going to come and visit next morning. And next morning came, and we slept in a bed. My girlfriend and I, we had a bed together, and the fellas had two or three rooms, I don't know. And next morning came, and I don't know whether we had breakfast or what, I don't remember, but in came about four or five American soldiers. And two or three spoke German. And one of them's first thing you ask, where are you from? You know, this is a normal thing when you meet somebody. And one of them told me that he is from a town where my family, some of my family lived. And he looked about the age that he would know my cousins. And I asked him, he says, oh, sure, I know them real well. And then there was another fellow with the same last name. And I said, are you from there too? And he says, no, he's not
from there. What city was this from that you were inquiring about?
Wiesbaden.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish he wasn't coming down now. And this other guy, the fellow I was talking to from Wiesbaden, he looked awfully young and kind of frightened to even to talk to. But the other guy was a very nice looking fellow, blondish, and I said to him, I says, you're not from Wiesbaden? He says, no. He says, I'm from Düsseldorf. And he wanted to know all about us and this and this and that. Well, anyhow, it was September the 3rd, and the next day was September the 4th, or it was maybe that day was September the 4th, I don't remember. And it was the eve of Rosh Hashanah. Mm-hmm. and the fellas, there were two or three others, there were American boys that didn't speak any German. Well, I had no problem conversing with them. And we talked, and we said that what we thought of if they would bring in some food for tonight, or maybe it was the next day, I don't remember, and that we would have a meal together and maybe some kind of a service, since it is Rosh Hashanah. And that's when it was, September the 4th. 1945, and I got married to the guy September the 4th, 1947, 2 years later. We married the same day. It was not on a Sunday, we got married on a Thursday. And if it wouldn't have been for him, I would have never, never made it, because I was just a bundle of nothing. I didn't know who I was or what I was or what I wanted, or I felt like 2 years old.
Yeah. Well, what happened at that point?
There was no love. No, definitely.
I mean that. I know that isn't what I meant. I mean, you stayed in this group.
We stayed with the fellas for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then Walter was working for the military intelligence. And when these three guys came to the town we were living in, they had to go and get permission. You couldn't just go and move anywhere.
No.
They had to go to the military intelligence to get permission to move or relocate, or whether you're a Jew or whatever, you know. So the guy they had to go and see was Walter. And talking with them, and, you know, knowing that they what they went through, and then he called the other guys in who were working with him, and they were all this military intelligence. And they said, oh yes, he said, that would be great if we would get a couple of Jews in here and have some kind of a little bit of a community. And they really looked after us.
So you stayed in this community until your husband?
Well,
you married your husband?
No. He that was in September. In February, he was sent home. There was, I mean, he was just a guy who cared for us, not only for me, but for the others too. And they gave, we got food from them, and they seen that we got food stamps, and they seen that we got whatever we needed. And my girlfriend and I moved out. We got our own little place. We had a rented room in somebody else's house, but we thought we would be better off being ourselves. And he finally, through writing to God knows where and what, finally made contact with my father.
I was going to ask you that.
Yes, because we could not write. There was no mail or anything. But through his channel, through military intelligence.
So you located your father?
But I never got to see him. So after Walter went home, he came to live with me finally after Walter went home in February, I think in April, and I tried to go into Berlin a couple of times, but I wasn't successful. I just couldn't cut it. That meant walking and crawling and begging and cheating and I just didn't. I tried it. I met quite a few people who were going there and trying to find people. And you had to cross over into Russian territory, and that was not easy.
So your father then found you eventually and came to live with you.
Yeah.
And then how did you get to the United States from that point? Did you have to go into a displaced persons camp?
Oh, yeah. Well, I applied to come here. And I got my, whatever you want to call it, visa, through the Hires. And the Hires brought me here. And they lost my papers, I broke my leg, I had very, very bad luck till I finally made it. But I finally arrived here the 17th of April, 1947.
And was your father with you?
No. My father could not make it. He was a sick man. He came to live with me I think Walter left in February. He came finally to live with me in April. That was 46.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 46. And I left in, well, I had to go through a displaced persons camp in, but inside in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I left like the end of February, beginning of March. My father couldn't make that. He was not well enough to, mm-hmm. to even try to attend. But in the meantime, there were quite a few other Jews who came back. Not came back, but came through and settled, and we met Walter, found quite a few people who were hiding nearby, who were originally from there, also mixed marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, I would say, I don't know, a community of probably about, some of the boys had gone home, maybe of 10 people,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. But most of them were people who were looking for other people or meeting somebody and saying, why don't you go with me? In the meantime, my friend who I had lived with had left, and Walter also tried to find her family, and she went into France.
Mm-hmm.
She mm-hmm. found somebody in France, and she immigrated into France. And
well, I keep asking about your dad. Did he remain in Germany, or
my
did he?
Father remained in Germany. He was never well enough to leave.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted him to come. I went to visit him for the first time, and he remarried again.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I went to visit him, I wanted to go. When was this Berlin war? That was like in the end of 50s, was
in
the 50s, war.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I was working at the time. I had a little boy, I couldn't go to work, but I was helping a friend, trying to make a couple of dollars to pay for my passage to go,
mm-hmm.
for my ticket. But then this came up with the Berlin Wall, and finally I went to visit him for the first time in 62.
Mm-hmm.
But he remarried almost the same time we got married, in 47. He met somebody who had also lost all her family originally from France,
mm-hmm.
but living in Austria. Her father was a diplomat with the Foreign Services.
Mm-hmm.
And she lost all her family, but she was never married.
Mm-hmm.
She was a young, comparatively young woman. And she met my father, and she seen that my father was a very, very sick man, and she said, well, she survived all that, and she made it her life's task to take care of him, and she really did for mm-hmm. all the years they were married. They were almost married 25 years.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
But we wanted my father to come and visit us, come here for my son's bar mitzvah, but would have been too much for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And at the time we were told that it's a tremendous risk to bring him here because he was not a well man, and with insurances and for health insurance, he was forever being treated for one thing or other, you know. So he never came.
Mm-hmm.
And he died, I don't know, what, 70? When did my father die, Walter? 71? 71, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God my husband went to meet him, and we went twice to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
And we were with my husband. I went the first time, I took my son in 62. My father lived at the end in Switzerland on the Italian border.
Mm-hmm. And whatever, just very briefly, whatever became of your brother who left England as a child, left for England as a child?
My brother went to England and was first living with relatives, but he always wanted to be on his own, and he went to school, to university in England, But he always wanted to be very much independent. Then the war broke out. He went into the service. And he was in Egypt. And I don't want to go into this, but when I was liberated in Baden-Baden, I don't think it was more than maybe 6 or 8 weeks later, I was called to the so-called front office that they had a telegram for me. And I said, this can't be. I mean, who knows that I'm here, you know, from the Red Cross. And there was a telegram saying, glad you're alive, W.G. Townley. And I said, well, if you can trace that telegram, maybe I can find out. But that telegram is not for me. But a name like I had, it's not like Ilse Meyer, you know, it's not a very common name, my first name or my last name. And they were very nice, and they said, well, if you want to send that telegram back, asking him who they are or how they know me would be very nice to find out. And a couple of days later, they called me, and I got a reply, oh, sorry, if I'm your brother. And my brother went into the British Army, and they had to change their names because they were fighting against the Germans. So this is the name he picked. This was a friend of his, and something to do with graham crackers and whatever. But his name was W.G. Townley, and this to this day. And I had no idea that, and he'd seen the list at one point. That I survived. My brother's doing very well in England.
He always remained in England.
Always remained in England. He became a very successful engineer. And at one point after the war, when he wasn't married, I had asked him, I said, look, you make your living there, you certainly can make it here, at least we would be together, you know. And he said, no, he said, England, this is home. And we went to see him many times, and he's been here.
That's quite interesting.
So,
well, I thank you very, very much, Anna. It was a very interesting and very informative interview, and I appreciate the time and effort that you have put into this, and how much it, the recalling is always very traumatic, and I appreciate you wanting to do this for us.
Well, if I know it will do anything to remind people of what happened, I know that others do it too, but I think it's very important that nobody should ever forget what happened to us.
Exactly. Well, thank
and
you
unfortunately,
again.
You can never forget.
Not an experience.
No, never.
Like that. No, I'm afraid not.
No.
Well, thank you again.
You're welcome.